I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday afternoon. This hour, last night's hate crime at Emmanuel African Methodist Church in Charleston, South Carolina. 9 people were killed by a white gunman who spent an hour inside the church at a prayer service before opening fire. Among those killed, the pastor of the church, who was a much-loved man in Charleston, Reverend Clementa Pinckney, who was also a state senator in South Carolina. Reverend Sharonda Coleman Singleton, a track coach, mother of 3. I was following this story last night and saw an agonizing tweet from her son, Chris, saying, "Something extremely terrible has happened to my mom tonight. Please pray for her and my family. Pray ASAP." Cynthia Hurd, a librarian, was also killed, and Tywanza Sanders, a recent graduate of Allen University. The other names have not yet been released. We have several guests with us this hour to talk about the enormity of this crime on so many levels, and we'll be speaking with Sam Spence at the beginning of the show, web editor at the Charleston City Paper, which is an alternative weekly newspaper in Charleston, South Carolina. Amardeep Kalika will be joining us in just a little while. He's an incredible person. He's a filmmaker. He teaches at Ripon right now. You'll recall that his father, and interestingly, we were talking to his brother, Pardeep, on yesterday's show about the Stop Shooting campaign in Milwaukee. Kalika's father was president and founder of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin in Oak Creek. And on August 5th of 2012, he was killed along with 5 others in a mass shooting that was committed by a white supremacist at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin. And also Reverend Darrell Williams will be joining us, a preacher at St. Mark African Methodist Episcopal Church in Milwaukee. We'll be welcoming phone calls from you during the course of this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. And Sam, we thank you very much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Hey, Kathleen.
So we have had quite a few developments. They found the killer yesterday. There have been vigils. I would imagine that your community is pretty shocked today.
Yeah, everyone is in a bit of a haze. Downtown, an area that around the church that's usually pretty busy in the morning, had some through traffic, but for the most part was a little bit deserted other than media and law enforcement gathering nearby, some onlookers, but for the most part pretty absent of people, which is very different from this time, for that time of day. The vigil that you mentioned was very heavily attended, and I think there's a huge outpouring of support already apparent in the city for what happened last night.
It's just so hard to understand, although we've seen it here in Wisconsin not that long ago, somebody walking into this church, sitting there for an hour next to the pastor, I understand, involved in listening to prayers in a prayer service, and then to open fire on everybody.
Yeah, you know, there are just so many complicating factors in what happened, and so many more questions than answers, obviously, at this point, but you know, and also keep in mind, this is just a few months after the Walter Scott shooting, which is only about 15 minutes away from where the church is last night. And so the whole community is kind of still dealing with the aftermath of that. And the legal ramifications, the political initiatives, which Reverend Pinckney was a part of, and obviously the law enforcement vigilance in the area that's already here because of that.
Tell me a little bit more. He sounds like he was an extraordinary person and really a rising political star. Tell me more about Reverend Pinckley.
He was elected very young to the State House and eventually later to the State Senate. Senate districts are pretty big here in South Carolina, so he represented parts of Charleston, Beaufort, Colleton counties, which are pretty diverse areas and kind of reached a pretty wide swath of people demographically and just numbers-wise. He was in Columbia yesterday while working in the legislature. They have a special session this week, and returned to Charleston yesterday afternoon for the meeting he had at the church.
Hmm.
And, you know, so he was working in the legislature until, middle of the afternoon yesterday when they were hashing out budget disputes and just working through the business of the state.
This particular shooting, of course, brings back horrible memories of shooting in four young girls dying in Birmingham, Alabama, other shootings at black churches in the South, and a horrendous racial history in the South particularly, not that it escaped the North, but in the South there were so many dramatic incidents. Did you feel that this era was over? Does it bring back memories of some of these horrendous incidents? Did you feel that this could happen in 2015?
Well, I don't think anyone believed it would happen. Even some of the most active civil rights leaders that are working in the state here can't remember anything like this happening in their lifetime. It's shocking on the face of it, but it's also made more shocking by the fact of that Emmanuel AME is a symbol of abolition in Charleston and the abolitionist movement and the African-American population historically in Charleston. It was a meeting place for freed slaves before the current church was built. It was torn down, burnt, rebuilt several times throughout its history, and was home. One of its founders was Denmark Vesey, who planned a massive slave rebellion in the early 1820s and was executed for it. And coincidentally, the anniversary for that planned uprising was June 16th. So, don't know if there's any connection there or if the shooter actually had any knowledge of the symbolic nature of Emmanuel AME, but everyone here sure does.
Mm-hmm. Do you have the sense that Charleston is a pretty racially harmonious community?
It's definitely a racially diverse community. The city has gotten criticism in the past for a lot of the struggles and controversies that a lot of cities struggle with, gentrification and income disparities in crowded urban areas, and I think it's mostly just a factor of a dense urban area that's also historic and growing very quickly, and so it's pretty racially harmonious in general, but I don't think it's without its critics.
Mm-hmm. So give us an update of where things are now. The gunman was found in Shelby, North Carolina, 250 miles outside of Charleston, I understand. How are people progressing now? Will there be a release of the names of the people who were killed? How are the families being comforted? What the Justice Department is doing? Give us an update.
The local police have established victim advocacy station for families and those affected by the shooting. The names, including the ones you mentioned at the top, are slowly being released, and more is being found out about them and their connection to the community. But I think there's a bit of an exhale now that the suspect was captured and that people still want to know why and want to know more, but no one's kind of sitting on the edge of their seats wondering what's next. Last I heard, I spoke to the someone up in Cleveland County, North Carolina, the county where Shelby is, and they said that the county wasn't processing them, that the city police were handling it, and then the last I heard that he was in the process of being brought back to Charleston.
And as far as you know, and as far as I've heard, there is no indication that anybody else was involved in this?
No, I think the police chief actually said at a press conference just before noon our time that there's no reason for them to believe that anyone else was acting in concert with the suspect.
Mm-hmm. And it is being called a hate crime. Can you give us more information about him? Do we know a lot more about him?
More is being found out as people kind of dig and make connections with people that he knew in the community. There have been photos circulated online of him posing in front of a vehicle that had a license plate with the Confederate States of America logo on it. I'm sure one of the widely circulated photos that you've seen with two flags on it were found to be or suspected to be flags of the apartheid era South Africa and an older flag of Rhodesia now Zimbabwe.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, both things are being found out more about the suspect. But I think that one of the early comforting factors that people learned last night was that the police were dealing with it up front right away as a hate crime. And so you kind of knew what you were dealing with at that point. And I think that kind of set the tone for what came out today.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's certainly been an outpouring of concern and people wanting to help. Do you know how people can best help at this point other than taking this in as much as any human being can and figuring out some way for these events to quit happening? There are so many divisions that need to be healed here.
Well, locally, you know, the police here are telling folks to avoid the area, stuff like that. But I think the information is still being pieced together, and I'm sure there will be outpourings of support once the outlets that people can go through to help out these families and the church and the community at large are made more public. You know, you saw President Obama take advantage of the podium this afternoon, calling for an end to gun crime and stricter gun laws that would prevent a person like this of getting their hands on a hand weapon.
Mm-hmm. Is it true that he received this gun for his birthday?
I saw that Reuters report too, but I don't know anything more about that.
Yeah. Sam, thank you very much for being with us from Charleston. Sam Spence is the web editor of the Charleston City Paper. It's an alternative weekly newspaper in Charleston, South Carolina, and they, of course, have been keeping their eyes on all that's been happening in Charleston. We're going to continue our discussion of what happened there last night. Amardeep Kalika is joining us now. Ironically, we had his brother, Pardeep, on yesterday's program, if you were listening during this hour, talking about the Stop Shooting campaign here in Milwaukee. Amardeep has many, many talents. He is a filmmaker. He's a politician. He ran for the U.S. House of Representatives in 2014. He co-directed the short film Jacob's Turn about a four-year-old with Down syndrome who plays T-ball for the first time. He has a new documentary, The Peacemakers, which will cover the stories of victims and survivors of Columbine, Sandy Hook, and, of course, the Wisconsin Sikh Temple shooting, which took place 3 years ago in August. His father was killed at that horrible massacre. The gunman was a white supremacist. His father, Satwan Kalika Singh, was president and founder of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin. And I had, it was my honor really to be at the first memorial in which Amardeep brought together people from Newtown and Virginia and people who had suffered shootings all over the country, Columbine, and put together a very, very moving, one of the most moving services I have ever seen. So he's been following this story today and joins us now. And we'll be welcoming phone calls, too. If you would like to express your reaction to what happened, there are so many different levels of what happened in Charleston. Feel free to do so. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. We should also say Amardeep is working as the Director of Digital Media in the Office of Marketing and Communications at Ripon College now. Amardeep, thank you so much for being with us. Good afternoon.
Hey, Kathleen. Thank you. And I just a little correction. I just resigned from Ripon. I apologize.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Well, I did. The drive was long from Milwaukee.
I know it was a good run for you. I've been following what you've been doing there, and it's great. Isn't it ironic we had your brother on yesterday talking about Stop Shooting in Milwaukee? I would imagine this particular shooting really hits you in the heart because it was inside a church. And, you know, you look at the place that's supposed to be of solace, as the president said, and peacefulness, and to have somebody come in and shoot up people in a church as they did at the Sikh temple is just really hard to take in, isn't it?
It is. It is painful. It's quite twisted in terms of how your emotions react to the situation. Right now, my thoughts are going towards the nine families and the community of Charleston. I lived in Savannah for quite some time, I think 5 years, and Charleston was a hop, skip, and a jump from Savannah. And I know it's a really nice community, and I know people there, and it's a really small, sleepy town with this beautiful architecture, and this is just not like the town, you know, and this is not like the area. And it just hurts to think that nine people, I mean, are going to be gone from this planet, and all they did was go to church and show up for Bible study.
Mm-hmm. It must be particularly hard for you. I'm sure that you deal with flashbacks of what happened in Oak Creek 3 years ago this August. When you hear this, it must be particularly, and even hard for us to imagine, how you take this in.
It is. There's echoes, so many parallels of what happened in Oak Creek that connect here. And I think the primary one is this extreme domestic terrorism. That's all we, I think that's what it should be labeled. It's extreme because it's got a white supremacist bend. It's gotten progressively worse. It's gone up and down in cycles. But after the election in 08, when we elected the first African-American president, there's been splinter cells and a real nasty backlash. And I think that this might all be connected to that one root problem. And if we can deal with that problem, if we can openly converse about the wrongs that have happened over history and how we can move beyond them, I think we will be a far safer society moving towards the future. And that peaceful society always will lead to a prosperous society. We just have to find the methodology to get there.
Mm-hmm. This gunman was quoted as saying yesterday, after he spent an hour at the prayer service, "I have to do it. You rape our women, you're taking over our country, and you have to go," which points to exactly what you were saying.
It's horrifically ignorant. It's horrifically ignorant in consideration of what African Americans have had to tolerate for the existence of, since the existence of America, really. And now I'm in a really unique situation because I am of Indian descent and I've lived with African American culture for so long in the inner city of Milwaukee. And then I've lived in what I can only label as a WASP type culture in America. And I've lived in both and they're quite different. And there is a wide ravine between them right now. And they're going in separate ways because of the racial tension that we've witnessed through police brutality and through the uprisings that have been happening throughout the year. And it's one of these gaps that we as a community, all of us, white, black, purple, blue, we all have to come together and say, look, we are American first. We are human even before then. There is no such thing as race. That's a misnomer. It's not scientific. We are one culture. We are one human race with various versions of that culture. We all believe in freedom. We all believe in these high truths and values. We have written them down. We have taken laws and pledged oaths to them. Now it's time for us to start acting like we're one people.
Have we not paid attention? Some of the response to this shooting in Charleston was, what is this, 1963 again? It brings back these horrible memories of bombings at churches back in the 60s in this country. Have we not kept our eye on the issue, or why is it exploding again now?
Well, the issue was quite deep to begin with. I mean, the issue is so horrific that in most other nations, they look at us and say, well, you have never remedied that or fixed that. And I can saunter back to the 60s and 63, 64, 68, 69, when we're dealing with a mass assassination plot. I mean, we have assassinations on black leaders left and right all throughout that period, most likely ventured into by the governments themselves and the people that they're harboring as these white extremists or these gangs that they subcontract to. And it's sad because we have not acknowledged the truth in those matters, and we have not moved forward from saying, hey, that that was wrong then. Even half of this is wrong now. The institutional racism that I witness on a day-to-day observatory, like just span around Milwaukee, it defies normality. What I came from when I was in California or Atlanta, and what I've come to find in Milwaukee, is there's a drastic conservative culture here that is not progressive, and it relies on racism to bend lies and to brainwash young people into thinking that they're better than other people, when that's not the truth. We're all equal, and we need to treat each other with that same compassion, empathy, and respect.
Amardeep Kalika is our guest. I know that he is probably planning on comforting victims, family members of the latest mass shooting in Charleston. He has done so with Serve to Unite, with other people from Columbine and Sandy Hook and Virginia Tech. And we're going to welcome phone calls for Amardeep. We're talking about the shooting last night, what has been classified as a hate crime. It's a horrendous story out of Charleston, South Carolina, and asking for your thoughts on this as well. The president made some eloquent comments just a little while ago. We have a portion of what he had to say, which we will listen to, and welcome what you have to say at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Amardeep is a documentary filmmaker. His father was killed at the Sikh temple shooting in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, 3 years ago this August. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We continue with Amardeep, and then in just a few moments, Reverend Darrell Williams will join us, a preacher at St. Mark African Methodist Episcopal Church in Milwaukee. As you know, the church in Charleston, South Carolina, Emmanuel African Methodist Church, is a very important place in African-American history, and we will talk about that and the issue of race involved in this shooting, and have our guest respond to what the president had to say today as well. We have many phone calls. Let's take a few of them for Amardeep before we welcome Reverend Williams and go to John is first in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Just a quick point before my main point here. Your guest said we're all one culture, but then he blasts conservatives. So we're all one culture except conservatives, I would guess, according to him. But beyond that, it's just really easy to isolate oneself now in our culture and digitize everything, and you become de-individualized, whatever the word is, and you get involved in your own sickness and you act upon it. And I think it's just so easy to do that with so much online now that you can simply find support for your own sickness and act on it easier than ever. And that's my point.
All right. Thank you, John, for your call. Dwayne in Weston. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi. Condolences to all the families out there that are affected by this. And it popped into my head that, you never hear of, it seems like it's always white men that are doing these mass killings, or for a large percentage of them. And I just wonder, you just think of like a revenge if black people ever started doing this, where they'd go in and kill 30, 40 people or 10. But, and then as far as the racist part of it, racism, I know the day after President Obama got elected, if I would have had a tape recorder in the break room that next day, I could have got 5 or 6 guys fired for the comments. So it's alive and well, and that was in Iowa.
Mm.
So that's my comment.
Thanks for the call. What can you tell us? Your father was killed by a white supremacist. What can you tell us about, and do we need to know about the minds of the people who commit these acts of horror, Amardeep?
I think John makes a good point. The mind of the people, it's hard to talk about sickness, especially psychological sickness, because we have a large pharmacological problem where we're using a wide, vast array of medicine that we know is harmful, and we know that it can trigger certain situations like this where somebody snaps or cracks. And I think there's something to be said about taking that off the table and saying, look, the person was sane. They were sane enough to sit there for an hour and take a gun out, and they were sane enough to have a gun. They were sane enough to premeditate this. They were sane enough to commit this act of violence that's so egregious. So now that they're sane enough, where are they getting that thinking? That, now I'm not, I can point my finger at conservative culture quite a lot because of the comment that the gentleman made after that. When Barack Obama was elected, I couldn't believe the backlash. I thought this would be it was a landslide victory. It wasn't a close victory. It was predominantly America wanted this great president who is exceptional with a number of things. But instead, what we got was a significant amount of backlash, including the rise of the Tea Party. Now, the rise of the Tea Party led to a wide array of problems. So, I mean, sickness plays a role, but it doesn't play as much of a role as social culture and growing up in a culture of hate and racism. And we have to take that and we have to surgically remove it from the America that we want to build.
Thanks, Duane, for your call. And Sheree in Waupun. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call, and hello to your guests. I came home from work last night and saw this on my television. And I live in Waupun, which is a small area, at least to me. And just this past weekend, I was in tears over two separate racist incidents that happened to me in an area that I've lived in for over 8 years now. I was mistaken for a prostitute, even though I had on jeans and a long sleeve shirt. And I had a conversation with a person who considers me their friend, and they made some comments about telling someone to go back to Africa and blah, 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 blah. And the problem that I run into is that I'm everybody's one black friend in town because there are no others. There's a lack of progressive thinking that is so missing that it's scary. And I honestly feel like at this point, I feel like black people are under attack. And I know that doesn't sound rational. It doesn't sound like it's something that we should have to discuss in 2015. But yes, I keep pointing to examples because they're there. It's true, and it's not something that we can't gloss over. It's an uncomfortable conversation, but it's worth having because we can only progress if we're honest. And I don't understand why people are scared of this.
Amardeep.
I think the caller makes a great point because I believe that most people of diversity and culture want to have these conversations, want to bring this out in light. And I've often found that it's the people that don't want to have the conversation that are usually unjust because if they weren't unjust, they would love to have the conversation and they would not feel defensive about it. But there has been something done in the past that was egregious, and it has not been rectified to this date, and now we're in 2014, and we have to get to that point where the discussion is had, the reparations are made, and we are moving forward. And that could have been done in 1969, in 71, in 75. We could go down the list, but there's always been a fight, and that fight is progressive versus conservative, and that's going to be the telltale sign of where we go in the future.
Stay with us, Amardeep. We want to introduce Reverend Darrell Williams. He's a preacher at St. Mark African Methodist Episcopal Church in Milwaukee, and he also has been at other churches in the area, Vernon Chapel, AME Church in Flint, Michigan. He's also been at the AME Church in Evansville, Indiana, and as the president said today, this was more than a church where this act of hate took place. It was a place of history, very important history in the African-American community. So we will speak with Reverend Darrell Williams about that. And welcome more of your phone calls as well. 800-486-8655 is our number. Reverend Williams, thank you very much for joining our conversation.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So tell me, when you heard the news last night, which you probably did, what went through your head? Did it knock you out? Were you angry? Were you, as the president said, angry, mad, and incredibly saddened?
Yes, I had a whole host of emotions. I was angry. I was saddened. Just a real mixed bag. The fact that this can still happen after so many years of struggling for civil rights, only tells me that although America has made some advances in the area of civil rights, that racism is still very much embedded and entrenched in our society. And the fact that someone would go into a sacred place like a church lets us know how embedded it is. Racism and hatred has no boundaries.
Mm-hmm. And this church, as the president was saying in his comments this morning, really was more than a church. It really is a historical place, isn't it? What happened there so many years ago was very important in the history of African Americans trying to live as human beings in this country.
Absolutely. It's my understanding that Mother Emanuel Emmy Church was a place of a site for the Underground Railroad back in the 1800s. It's been a place of political empowerment for the people of South Carolina. It's no accident that the pastor was a state senator in South Carolina. And so it's real symbolic to me that the killer would make that the choice where he would unleash his hatred. It tells us that we have a long way to go in terms of bringing justice and righteousness to America. And the fact that he struck at the symbol of righteousness and justice in the city of South Carolina tells us that the fight is long from being over.
Yeah, and so in what way should the fight be waged? Some will see this as some young white guy who was mixed up with really white supremacist thought. He was, who knows, a loner. You can just see the story unfolding about him. But he did this by himself. Others have said it's part of a larger culture that we just haven't dealt with matters of race, that people are, you know, worried that we have our first African-American president and what's the world coming to, and African-Americans are taking over, as this guy evidently said before he killed everybody. How do we take on the issue of race now? What do we do with this incident to take on a broader conversation?
Well, first of all, I agree with the letter. I don't believe it was an isolated incident, and I wasn't aware that the killer made that statement. But that's proof that it was not an isolated incident. I think it's part of a prevailing and embedded culture in our society that leads to these kind of reactions that are not that show that they're not happy with the progress that we're trying to make in the area of race and civil rights. I think that what needs to happen, and I'm glad that you're hosting this, is that we need to continue to have these conversations. And when we don't have these conversations, and when we dismiss the idea that racism is still a reality, we do it at our own peril. The fact that people of various faiths and people of various races can talk, I think is the we're at the ground level of helping to solve the situation, and we need to encourage these to happen a whole lot more.
Let's go to phone calls for both you and Amardeep. Cheryl has been waiting in Conover. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you?
Good. You know, I'm just a 60s kid, and I'm white, and I marched with Father Grappi, and all I can say is, why is there so much hate? John Lennon said it the best. Give peace a chance. I mean, the one caller talked about the conservatives versus the liberals. That's not what this is about. What this is about is pure hate. It's one thing to have a belief, and those of us from the 60s have our beliefs. But I'm going to tell you, it's another thing to pick up a weapon to rid yourself of other people's beliefs. It's just wrong. And I cringe when I hear these things, because I don't care If it's white on black, black on black, black on white, it doesn't matter. It's pure hate.
Why is there so much hate? Reverend Williams, you first.
Well, oh, wow. That's an age-old question. Well, I could actually go all the way back to the early years of America. I think it's rooted in the whole idea of economic profit. The European slave trade was based on profit and keeping people subjugated, and keeping people undereducated. When these people began to find out through self-empowerment and through the reading of the Bible that that was not their lot and that power could be shared and ought to be shared, that caused a problem with the people who are in power. And to this day, it's still causing that power. Because to fight for civil rights means that those in power have to share. Humanity is innately selfish. And we don't want to share. It just so happened that the people who are disempowered disproportionately happen to be people of color. And so I think racism is rooted in that, and we have to look at it from that historical perspective.
Amardeep, why is there so much hate? How do you explain the hate of the gunman who killed your father?
Such a deep question. I think there's two Americas, the America that is very public and creates public discourse but doesn't attack at the truth. And I think that in this case, and there's the other side of America, which inside their house they say things that they believe are truthful, though they have no basis or merit. And I will go on to say there are wide, vast differences in culture, but specifically around American sexuality, there are significant issues that we're dealing with. We are one of the most developed nations, yet we have one of the highest rape cycles because of our university and education system. But this predicament of cross-cultural dating, all these things, is creating tension or has created tension, which should need not be there. Mm-hmm. Because most humans, I mean, we all agree we're a human race, and this cross-cultural boundary doesn't affect most people. But those who hate others for economic reasons or for socio-economic reasons, those people are getting the best of us. In our situation, because we're Indian, that was a lot of it. A lot of people said, oh, those immigrants are taking our jobs. That doesn't right. make sense. We're extremely poor. We come from one of the poorest regions on the earth. You know, but these things are lies that get told in a household that convert people. And these lies end up creating harm because those people, when they go out in public, don't want to repeat those lies. They hold them back so nobody can converse with them and clarify. So this ignorance, and that's where I think it all stems from. Hate stems from ignorance. And people are ignoring the fact that other people are human. That's a big issue.
We're going to take more phone calls in a moment. The president had some stirring comments this morning as well. He said that he's had to do entirely too many of these press conferences in which he gives heartfelt comments and some kind of solace to the victims of gun violence because there's been so much gun violence in this country. We'll hear part of what he had to say and ask Reverend Williams and Amardeep Kalika to respond. And we're welcoming more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. We're talking about last night's hate crime in Charleston, South Carolina, at Emmanuel African Methodist Church. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The president spoke this morning in a press conference, his comments directed at the sadness that he felt. He was and Michelle were friends of the pastor at the Emmanuel African Methodist Church and his wife, and he had comments to say. This one concerned why we're seeing so much of this in the United States, and I'd like to have our guest respond to what he had to say. Here's the president.
I've had to make statements like this too many times. Communities like this have had to endure tragedies like this too many times. We don't have all the facts, but we do know that, once again, innocent people were killed in part because someone who wanted to inflict harm had no trouble getting their hands on a gun. Now is the time for mourning and for healing. But let's be clear. At some point, we as a country will have to reckon with the fact that this type of mass violence does not happen in other advanced countries. It doesn't happen in other places with this kind of frequency.
Reverend Williams, do we have to take on the issue of weapons?
Oh, absolutely. I think gun control is a big issue in America. It's too easy for criminals to get their hands on guns. And contrary to what some of my friends believe, guns do kill people. And I think guns, now we don't know anything about the mental state of this young man, but guns and mental illness is a volatile mixture. Guns and hatred is a volatile mixture. So I think that gun control is a very important issue, and we do need to advocate gun control in our society, because it's far too easy for people to get their hands on guns. And let me just say this before you go to my other brother on the line. If you look at it from a historical perspective, I don't think our founding fathers, when they wrote the Second Amendment, they never did intend on any kind of person, regardless of their mental state, or person being able to get their hands on any kind of gun, a weapon. For example, there's some who believe I ought to be able to carry around a semi-automatic or whatever I want. I don't think that was never the intent of our founding fathers. And so we do a little bit more studying of what our founding fathers intended. I think we would discover that as well. But gun control is a serious issue in our society, and I hope the faith and a non-faith community can come together, rise up, and do something about it.
Mm-hmm. And Amardeep, you've lived through this, and you've also been of comfort to people at mass shootings in other places in the country in a remarkable way, I know. What do the people you talk to, and what do you have to say about this issue? Does it need to be taken on? Obviously, the time doesn't seem to be right yet in America, but does it need to be taken on, the issue of guns, in some way?
I think it's long overdue. It might be a good 40, 50 years overdue. When we were having an influx of World War II weaponry that was just being left here, and then it was being disseminated amongst the inner city or being sold out of, you know, back trunks and in streets and alleys. But I think what Reverend said is vital to this conversation, because the founding fathers had a very narrow view at that point of who was a citizen. They didn't even give people who were not landowners the right to vote. So this unprotected, unlimited, and outrageous Second Amendment that's gone without checks, without any modification, needs to be modified at this point. And I can give you some scientific, you know, basis to that argument. And one of them is, if you take children and you want to make them literate, the literacy rate goes up if you have more books in your house. That's a direct connection to whether or not they pick up that book and start using it through trial and error or through modeling. And we do know now that children model more than they listen. And I'm a parent, so I've known that for about four or five years now. But if you're a parent, you know that. People model. Kids model. And if we're in a country that has more guns than it does citizens, if we have a one-to-one ratio, people are going to find those weapons. This young man who did this is going to find that weapon and use it in maniacal ways because he is not responsible or able to use it properly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to find a law.
Let's go to Steve next, our caller. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hi. Say, concerning racism, you know, we don't come out of our mamas as racist. We all come out the same way. And singer-songwriter Michael Johnson once sang a song called You've Got to Be Carefully Taught. It was a ballad about racism.
It's about from South Pacific, yeah.
And it's until we can sever that line, this is not going to end. And, you know, it's been said, you know, we got to wait for a generation to die out before this will change. Well, if that line is not severed before that die-off occurs, it's going to continue.
Thank you, Steve, very much for your call. It's sometimes, Reverend Williams, seems to be taking forever for us to get rid of that hatred. I mean, we lived through, you think about the 60s, and you think about, well, before that, slavery in this country, for heaven's sake, and Jim Crow, and forever to get civil rights legislation. I mean, for heaven's sake, how long does it take to rid ourselves of this evil? It just seems endless, doesn't it?
Yeah, but we can't ever give up the fight. When Jesus in the Bible talks about the kingdom of God, which is not necessarily a place, but the kingdom of God is a state of mind, and it also can exist today. The notion was is that we had to fight for that. We had to struggle for that.
Yes.
And it was an endless struggle. And I believe that we may not see it and our lifetime, but that's not an excuse for us not to continue to fight. And I'm reminded of another piece of scripture in my tradition that says that we're not to grow weary in well-doing. Sometimes when we don't see the progress right away, we will grow weary and we'll stop. And when we stop, then we allow the criminals and we allow the people who hate to have their way. But it says that we're not to grow weary in well-doing, but due season we will reap it, we faint not.
Thanks, and Steve. I'm sorry.
No.
And
I preach that to my people on every Sunday, and so I got to believe it myself.
Gail in Fish Creek, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is such a sad thing that's happened, and just through history it's just been terrible. But thinking, too, about how things are still going on in the African countries that are so violent, and it's people against their own people, and it's happening all around the planet. And the one thing that isn't changing and accountabilities that aren't being done, I mean, the Dutch just got off so free. Weren't they the first ones that started way back when, taking people and turning them and taking them overseas to be slaves? But they were working with people in African countries, and that's what's so appalling, that these things aren't being addressed even in that country, and we aren't doing sanctions against Africa. Business is booming, but there's violence against women in every culture.
Yeah, there's violence all over the planet, no doubt about it.
Yes.
Let me give you, we're almost out of time, but this is an interesting point. Mel writes to us on Facebook, I listen to, and we hear this from people every now and then, presidential candidate Donald Trump lambast Mexicans yesterday. Where is the responsibility when it comes to this rhetoric? Amar Deep, you got 30 seconds.
There is no responsibility on the part of the right. Right now, they're using any rhetorical device to drive fear into the hearts of Americans and use that for votes or use that for economic drive. And we have to stop it. We have to stop being fearful of each other, start holding each other's hands, start loving one another. And I think that will rectify this situation.
Thank you, Omar Deep Kalika. Very pleased to have you with us. And Reverend Darrell Williams, thank you ever so much. You know, I'll end this with how I started this show. This just got to me, this tweet from Chris Coleman Singleton, whose mother was killed last night. I was looking at news feeds last night, and he said, something extremely terrible has happened to my mom tonight. Please pray for her and my family. Pray ASAP. Kind of a fitting way to end this. It just kind of, that really got to me. The whole thing gets to me. Thank you for being with us, Reverend.
Thank you.
Reverend Darrell Williams, Amardeep Kalika, thanks to KP Whaley and Scotty Myers for producing this hour. The show that was scheduled for today will be rescheduled, which looks at how ghettos formed in this country for next week. We wanted to respond to the news, horrible news out of Charleston. We have another hour to go. First, the news.